بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا وعظيمنا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين وأصحابه الغر الميامين. الحمد لله الذي جعلنا من المتمسكين بولاية سيدي ومولاي علي بن أبي طالب.
اللهم صل على الله.
الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. أما بعد، يقول الله في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: إن علينا جمعه وقرآنه. The first of our salawat in honor of Rasulullah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. The second in honor of Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib. The third with your loudest voices in honor of the Imam of our time, Imam Sahib al-Asr wa Zaman.
Allahumma salam.
Respected scholars, brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. The discussion concerning the compilation of the Holy Quran is without a doubt one of the most important historical discussions within the religion of Islam, and indeed a discussion that requires a thorough dissection, for it's a discussion from which many important historical lessons may be learnt and many important theological examples may be observed. The preservation of the Holy Quran in the early years of the religion of Islam is without a doubt one of the central and most important areas of the religion. Understanding how the Quran was collected, how it was compiled, how it was protected in the face of a religion that was spreading far and wide is without a doubt a topic of great interest. We know that after the Holy Prophet had passed away, the religion of Islam within a period of 30 years had spread as far as Azerbaijan and Armenia. You therefore found that the different dialects that came to read the Holy Quran varied from one group to another. The question arises as to who exactly compiled the Quran for all of these people at the time. As in, if you were to ask many Muslims in the world today, who compiled the Quran, this Quran that we have with us today, who exactly compiled it, you find that the answers which the Muslims give vary from one person to another. As in, even in this hall today, if I were to ask you, who do you think compiled the Quran? You'll find that the answers will vary. You may find some who say the Quran was compiled in the time of the Holy Prophet. Others who may turn around and say, no, not at all. After the Prophet died, straight away the Quran was compiled, for example, by Abu Bakr. Others will turn around and say, no, not even Abu Bakr. Others will turn around and say the Quran was compiled by Uthman bin Affan. Because we know very well that the Quran that we have with us today is called the Uthmani Codex. It's called the Uthmani Codex because of the importance of the role of Uthman bin Affan in making one official codex of the Quran. Therefore, when people ask the question, who compiled the Holy Quran, you find that sometimes the reply comes as Uthman. And without a doubt, Uthman's period of caliphate is vital in the history of the compilation of the Quran. Because it was in Uthman's time that many Qurans were burnt, and only one Quran remained official. Uthman ordered that a number of the Qurans around the Muslim world were to be burned completely, and that there was only meant to be one official codex of the Quran read by Zayd bin Thabit in Medina. Therefore, somebody asked the question that was it Uthman who compiled the Quran? Was it Abu Bakr who compiled the Quran? Or was the Quran compiled by other than them? Let's seek to examine this question in tonight's analysis by looking at exactly what are the arguments for Abu Bakr's compilation of the Quran. What happened at the Battle of Yamama that made Umar ibn al-Khattab ask Zayd bin Thabit to compile? Why did Uthman bin Affan ask for a recompilation of the Quran? And what was the Uthmani Codex discussing? Also, what was Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib's stance when it came to the burning of the Qurans? What are the proofs that the Quran was compiled in the time of the Holy Prophet? And also, if Uthman compiled the Quran, then why is it that the Muslims ended up killing him as their caliph in Medina? Let's examine this and seek to dissect this topic in complete depth. The first argument that's normally given as to who compiled the Quran is Abu Bakr, without a doubt. You find that Abu Bakr's name is in great prominence when it comes to the person who compiled the Quran. For what reason? We know very well that when the Holy Prophet died, there were two groups of the companions as soon as the Prophet died. One group went off to bury the Prophet, as in they felt it was their duty that the greatest man who ever lived on this earth deserves for his best friends to be there at his burial. As in, if I'm now going to pass away, I'd think that my best friends would be with me in my burial. I would never think that my best friends would be elsewhere in the burial. You find that when the Prophet passed away, there was a handful of the Sahaba, out of 100,000 who claimed they loved him, a handful of them who went to his funeral to perform the shrouding and the burial. Another group of them went and gathered where? They went and gathered at the hut of the Saqifa. They went there to gather. Why? Because they had heard that the Ansar were about to appoint a leader for themselves. So this group that went there decided that they should be the ones who look after the issue of leadership. You found that when Umar pledged allegiance to Abu Bakr, what was their argument? Their argument was that Abu Bakr and Umar are from the Muhajirun. And the Muhajirun have a greater right than the Ansar. When Abu Bakr became Khalifa, through that election that took place at the Saqifa, an election where many of the electors were not present, as soon as he became Khalifa, he faced two problems as Caliph straight away. The first problem was Ali ibn Abi Talib's lovers who wouldn't pay zakat to him. What do we mean? You see, many people ask me the question that if Imam was chosen on the day of Ghadir, why did nobody stand up for Ali ibn Abi Talib after Rasulullah died? No, there were companions who stood up for Ali ibn Abi Talib, but those companions were silenced by the sword of Khalid ibn al-Walid. Let me explain. What happened was, amongst those companions, a companion of Rasulullah, Malik bin Nuwayra. Malik bin Nuwayra was the archetypal Arab gentleman. A brave man, a man of great poetry, a beautiful looking man, and a man of generosity. As in, if you were to read about Malik bin Nuwayra, you would find Malik used to be a man known for one particular trait. He used to always make sure that there was smoke coming out from the chimney of his house, so that just in case someone walked past the house and they were hungry, they'd know that there's food cooking in this house. So he'd welcome all of the poor into his house. He at the time was the head of Bani Yarbu', and Bani Yarbu' were a subsection of Bani Tamim. This Malik bin Nuwayra used to collect taxes for the Holy Prophet on behalf of Bani Hanbala. He would collect their taxes and he'd send them to Rasulullah in Medina. When Amir al-Mu'mineen was appointed on the day of Ghadir, Malik bin Nuwayra was sure that when I've heard the news that Rasulullah has died, our taxes will go to Ali ibn Abi Talib. But what was the news that came to him? The news that came to him was that Ali ibn Abi Talib has been removed, and that Abu Bakr is the one who's taken over this. Malik bin Nuwayra said, very well, none of our zakat will reach that man, for that man was not the man chosen on the day of Ghadir. When this was heard, Khalid ibn al-Walid had gone on a killing spree, an absolute killing spree. That anyone who wants to debate me in Islamic history, they're more than welcome to debate me at any time about Khalid ibn al-Walid when Rasulullah died. Khalid ibn al-Walid, after Rasulullah died, The first killing spree he went on was the lovers of Ali ibn Abi Talib, who wouldn't pay zakat to Abu Bakr. You see, if you study Islamic history today, you'll find a section called the Ridda Wars. Yes? The Ridda Wars, normally, they're meant to describe apostates who left Islam. Not at all. The Ridda Wars, half of them were Sahaba of Rasulullah who rejected Abu Bakr's Khilafah. Of them was Malik bin Nuwayra. When Khalid ibn al-Walid came face to face with Malik bin Nuwayra, he said to him, pay your zakat to Abu Bakr. He said, never. He said, why? He said, Rasulullah chose Ali ibn Abi Talib on the day of Ghadir. All of us were witnesses to him choosing him. There's no way at all that I'll go with that man ahead of Amir al-Mu'mineen. You know what Khalid ibn al-Walid done to him? Khalid ibn al-Walid executed him. Yes? A sahabi of Rasulullah. You see, this measures of sahaba, I still don't understand until today. On the one hand, you could be a sahabi, yes, because you saw Rasulullah, so you have to respect. But a sahabi who leans to Ali ibn Abi Talib is not respected. This Malik bin Nuwayra was executed. But to add insult to injury, Malik was married to a beautiful lady by the name of Layla. You know what Khalid ibn Walid did? The same night he raped Layla, yes? Exactly the same night, Khalid ibn al-Walid raped Layla. When he raped Layla, of course, those who are apologetic for Khalid in the books of history say, no, he didn't rape her. He slept with her. Yes? He slept with her, didn't rape her. We reply by saying what? We reply by saying, but you would think a widow has an idda period, correct or no? As in, if the husband's died, there is an idda period for that widow. Let's say the idda of a widow in Islam is how long? The idda of the widow in Islam is 4 months and 10 days. Therefore, when someone comes and says, Khalid ibn Walid slept with Layla, well, either he's raped her, let's reject the rape, or he slept with her, she's still in her idda, her husband has died. Abu Qatad al-Ansari, when he heard this, he went back to Abu Bakr. Abu Qatada was a companion of Rasulullah. He went back to Abu Bakr. He said to Abu Bakr, I have no relation with that Khalid. That Khalid ibn Walid is barbaric. Don't place me with him. This man has to be stoned, for he committed zina with the wife of a Muslim and he killed a Muslim as well. When the news reached Umar ibn al-Khattab, Umar and Khalid are first cousins, yes? Both of them are Makhzumis, correct or no? Both are Bani Makhzum. They're first cousins. Umar ibn al-Khattab took a vicious stance against Khalid. He told Abu Bakr, murder and adultery. The man has to be stoned. Abu Bakr can see that this man has committed murder. There's no doubt. Okay, forget the murder. He's committed adultery with someone's wife the same day. Abu Bakr turned around and said, how can I punish a man whose sword has been protected by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Yes? As in, that's the problem. If you're going to have a rule for some and another rule for another, that's not called a just government. That government is a government of injustice. Khalid ibn al-Walid, how could you say because his sword protected Islam? Even as a historian, I can destroy that argument, but anyway. How could you say that his sword protected the religion of Islam? Khalid ibn al-Walid attacks Malik bin Nuwayra. And then after that, does what? Sleeps with his wife. What did you find? You found that they killed him, but nothing happened to Khalid ibn al-Walid at all. No, on the contrary. Khalid ibn al-Walid continued where? Khalid ibn al-Walid continued to fight whom? To fight a battle which resulted in Abu Bakr compiling the Quran. Please understand this area. Khalid ibn al-Walid, the second battle he fought was against Musaylama al-Kadhab. Musaylama claimed to be a prophet, like the holy prophet, yes? Musaylama said, Muhammad is a prophet for his tribe, and I'm a prophet for my tribe. Of course, we believe Rasulullah is the final prophet of God. Nobody else can claim Nubuwwah in his time. Musaylama said, no, I am a prophet of God. Muhammad's a prophet. Muhammad has his Quran. I have my Quran. And I will not pay zakat to Abu Bakr. I have no interest in paying zakat to anyone. This Musaylama, when he was talking like this, he even said, I have my own Quran. They asked him, how do you have your own Quran? He replied by saying, by the name of the elephant. And what's an elephant? And what makes you think of an elephant? It has a long trunk and a ropey tail. These are but the trifles of our Lord. So what have you offered mankind? All you've given us is a verse about an elephant. But he said that, you know what? The same way Muhammad can give you an ayah about an elephant, I can give you an ayah about an elephant as well. This Musaylama led a group of people to fight against Abu Bakr. Khalid ibn al-Walid, alongside Akrama, they fought a vicious battle known as the Battle of Yamama. I want all of you today, when you go back home, Google Battle of Yamama. Study that battle. That's one of the first battles after Rasulullah died. That battle, the Battle of Yamama, after the Holy Prophet had died, that battle, when it took place, why did it take place? It took place because of Musaylama al-Kadhab. Musaylama said, I don't believe in Abu Bakr. Not only I don't believe in Abu Bakr, I'm a prophet of Allah like Muhammad was. It was an absolutely vicious battle that took place. Do you know how many Muslims died in that battle? 960 Muslims died in that battle. And that Musaylama was a ferocious warrior. Do you know who ended up killing Musaylama al-Kadhab? Who ended up killing him? Wahshi, the killer of Hamza. Because you know, Wahshi converted to the religion of Islam at the end of his life when Mecca was opened. Wahshi threw the same spear he threw on Hamza bin Abdul Muttalib on the day of Uhud. He threw the spear, Abu Dajjal al-Ansari beheaded him, and you found that the Battle of Yamama was won. But there was a problem. At that battle, up to 400 memorizers of the Quran had died. Yes? 400 memorizers completely of the Quran. When they had died, the narration in Sahih al-Bukhari is an interesting narration. And this narration is why some people believe that Abu Bakr compiled the Quran. Why? Because the narration in Bukhari states that Zayd bin Thabit, he's the narrator, Zayd says that I was called in by Abu Bakr after the Battle of Yamama. When Zayd was called in, as we know, Zayd was one of the writers of the Quran with Ali ibn Abi Talib. They were the two main writers of the Quran. When Zayd was called in, Abu Bakr looked at him. He said, Umar ibn al-Khattab has said to me that in that battle of Yamama, we have had a great number of casualties of memorizers of the Quran. Now, Zayd, you are a young man and a man of wisdom. And we want you to be the one who compiles the Quran for us. Zayd looked, he said, but oh Abu Bakr, how could I do something which Rasulullah didn't do? Umar looked at him and he tried to push Zayd and say to him, Zayd, you are the one who has to collect the Quran. You are one of the memorizers of the Quran. Again, the reply came, but Umar, how could I do something which Rasulullah did not do? And then Zayd says, and I thought to myself that how am I going to do something which the Prophet didn't do until Shaitan removed the rancor from my chest. Yes? Shaitan removed the rancor that existed in my chest. And I said, if Abu Bakr had given me the task of shifting a mountain to another mountain, that would have been easier for me than collecting the Quran, which Rasulullah did not do. Yes? So then he says that I went to Abu Khuzaymah. Abu Khuzaymah, I collected all the Quran, because you know the Quran was on parchments. It was either written on wood, or on silk, or on leather, or on white tablets, or on the ribs of an animal, or on the shoulders of an animal. So he went and he said, I collected everything until I was missing one ayah, Surah 9, verse 129, because you know these companions would all write the Quran in different places. So he said that I collected that ayah from Abu Khuzaymah, and I compiled the whole Quran for Abu Bakr. When Abu Bakr got this Quran, what did he do with it? He put the Quran in a treasure box. Yes. He put it there and he said, now we the Muslims have an official Quran for us. Many people, when they read the story of the Battle of Yamama, assume that Abu Bakr collected the Quran. We reply by saying that yes, Abu Bakr may have collected the Quran, but he wasn't the first to compile the Quran. No. Abu Bakr had a fear that because so many memorizers of the Quran had died, he had a fear that there wouldn't be enough Qurans in the community at the time. So like the other Sahaba had their own Quran, he wanted a Quran compiled for his own use. You see, if that Quran was for the Muslim Ummah, then the people would have flocked to Abu Bakr to take the Quran. Abu Bakr, what did he do? When he took the Quran and compiled it, he wasn't the first to compile the Quran. Rather, after the Battle of Yamama, He ordered that the Quran is brought together for his own personal usage. Number two, what's interesting is what? What's interesting is Abu Bakr finds it important that the Quran is to be compiled just in case the Quran is lost. But the man who the Quran came to didn't think it was important to compile the Quran in his time. As in now you're saying that Abu Bakr said that it's important we compile the Quran because I fear we're going to lose it. But the man who the wahi came down upon didn't think it was important. It's like the poet says, they say it's important for us to choose a leader because we don't have a leader in our nation. But the man who bought the religion didn't think it was important to decide who a leader is. Therefore, that opinion that Abu Bakr was the first to compile the Quran because of the Battle of Yamama, no, that opinion is rejected. Abu Bakr, if we give the benefit of the doubt, even though Ayatollah Al-Khoi in the proglomina makes it clear that there are 22 hadiths that show that it's contradictory that Abu Bakr was the first to compile the Quran. Yet what you find is that Abu Bakr, if anything, if we give the benefit of doubt, Abu Bakr felt there was a need for one Quran, which he wanted to preserve in his house. So he ordered Zayd bin Thabit to protect the Quran by collecting it. That first opinion, that Abu Bakr therefore collected the Quran, that one's rejected. The second opinion is what? The second opinion is that Uthman bin Affan compiled the Quran. And I want you to focus on this area importantly. Many Muslims today, if you ask them who compiled the Quran, they'll say to you, Uthman. And even the Quran that we have with us today is called the Uthmani Codex. We all agree. No one rejects this. What does it mean, the Uthmani Codex? Does it mean that Uthman bin Affan was the first to collect the Quran? No, that's not the meaning. What's the meaning then of Mus'haf Uthman? You see, at the time, there were four codexes of the Quran in the Islamic State. There was one in Damascus. There was one in Homs. Yes? There was one also where? There was one in the land of Kufa. Yes? You found that these Qur'ans were the official codexes by the year 20 after Hijrah. Rasulullah had died in the 11th year after Hijrah. 9 years after him, you had Qur'ans which were in different parts of the Islamic Empire. These Qur'ans did not have diacritical marks, nor did they have punctuation marks on them. So what began to happen was the people of the area would read according to their dialect. Yes? So if you had the Quran in Homs, yes, Miqdad ibn Amr, he had the Quran in Homs. Or for example, you had the Quran in Damascus with Ubay ibn Ka'ab. Or you had the Quran where? In Basra, Abu Musa al-Ash'ari. Or you had the Quran in Kufa, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. Each one had a Quran in their local vicinity. Imagine today, all of you here, I say to you that I'm coming out with a book, yes? I want the people of Canada to have a book, the people of London, the people of Bombay, and the people of Hungary. The book is the same book. The pronunciation starts to become different sometimes, correct? The accents are different. By the 20th year after Hijrah, because you know, the idea of Dhamma and Fatha and Tanween, that wasn't in the Quran in the time of Rasulullah. That came years after Rasulullah. You know, today in the Quran, you see the Tanween, and you see, for example, a Fatha or a Kasra. For example, when you see that, you think that was the original Quran? No, the original Quran had none of these. Abu al-Aswad al-Du'ali brought this in. Then after him, you had people like Yahya bin Ya'mar. Then after him, Khalil bin Ahmad al-Farahidi. Otherwise, before that, you never had these. What you had was, you have a Quran, you send it to Damascus. You have another Quran, you send it to Basra. You have another Quran, you send it where? To Kufa. You have another Quran, you send it to Homs. But the people of Kufa, do they have the same accent as the people of Damascus or no? As in the Iraqi brothers over here, they'll know better than anyone that the person in Kufa, his accent is even different, for example, from the person in Samarra. Correct or no? You'll have someone in Kufa, or even you may have someone in Najaf whose accent is different from someone